I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Rachel Jones. Rachel is the founder of Mommy's Dream Team. And Rachel, congratulations. Your organization was also a recent winner of the Bad Girls Venture competition. Maybe you can share a little bit about that.
Well, Bad Girl Ventures is a female entrepreneurship competition. It's a 9-week course, and we go over how to create a business plan during that 9-week time period. So they bring in coaches that help you with legal, marketing, social media, accounting, pretty much everything that you need to know. They go over in a class, and then you meet up with mentors afterwards for specific questions on your business. The competition part of it, there is 10 finalists. You can take it as a student, but for the finalists, we are competing for a $25,000 low interest loan. We also got 3 months of free office space at Centerfuse, and we got a $500 grant.
You're a night nanny yourself, but Mommy's Dream Team is really more like a personnel agency, isn't it?
Yeah, we're a nanny agency, so we are specifically nights. Was our first year. We would go in with overnight with infants and spend the night so parents can get sleep. Typically, they'd book us when they're pregnant, and then we come in the first night they're home from the hospital and really help them establish a good eating and sleeping routine.
Where were you when my kids were babies?
I was a twinkle in my parents' eyes.
Exactly.
But what we're noticing is that a lot of people need a day help as well with infants and with older children as we get into the summer program. So we are creating an in-home teaching program that we're running by somebody that has a Montessori background that all of our nannies will take in crafts and games and educational pieces for their children that they're helping.
How do mothers effectively balance the fact that, you know, they want to be right there with their baby and having somebody else take care of the baby in the middle of the night? I mean, have you found success with these folks or?
Yeah, I think most of our clients are corporate women. They're typically 30 to 45, and they may not have family or experience with babies. So most of them have moved here for other jobs, and they just haven't really had time to learn about babies. And we come in and we help them bond with their babies. So we'll help them if they are having a hard time putting it down. If they're stressed, we'll talk them through it. We have a lot of a continuing education to help them with lactation. So if they're having issues nursing, most of our people can help them. So I think they see it as a relief, and we become really close. We're kind of like honorary aunties with most of our clients.
You mentioned professional women. You work with companies and corporations to provide this as a benefit, for example, to some of their employees?
Yes. So what we're working towards is getting into different companies that we can provide a corporate discount program for. So when people go in to talk about their maternity and paternity leave options, that will be part of that package. And what we'd ideally like to see is be able to help these companies because the dads are more productive at work, the moms are better prepared to come back to work, and people are less likely to get sick when they are well rested.
Well, and from the business perspective, they want it to be as easy as possible so that when the mom does come back to work, you know, they can focus on work while they're there, not being worried about their baby.
Exactly. And I think people are very comfortable with our nannies. They're very well educated. They have a lot of screening.
Rachel, if folks listening would like to learn more about Mommy's Dream Team, how can they find that information?
They can find us on mommysdreamteam.com, Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, LinkedIn, and our blog.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Rachel Jones. Rachel is a night nanny expert and the founder of Mommy's Dream Team. And Rachel, you have quite the business going. You've only had your own business for about a year, but you already have 15 employees. You recently were a Bad Girl Ventures Award winner. You've got a grant to create a business plan and even expand your business further.
We started out as a night nanny agency. We go in overnight with newborns and spend the night so parents can get sleep. Normally they book us when they're pregnant and we show up the first night they're home from the hospital. We help them establish a eating and sleeping routine. If it's a nursing mom, all of our people have continuing education to help her be successful. And if it's a bottle fed baby, we take care of everything overnight. And then from there, we've noticed a need for people to have day nannies as well that they trust. And since we're already in there and our people have such great education, we've decided to incorporate a teaching program that's in your home and that'll have play groups of the week and field trips of the month with a day nanny agency launching in March.
Yeah, if someone can come and help me do things that maybe I'm not as great at, or it will allow me to sleep so I can be a better mom, a better professional, that just makes all kinds of sense.
I think the moms are very relieved when we come in there. They love their babies, but it's supposed to be a very joyful time of life, and instead it often turns into a very stressful time. So if we can be their support system, especially if they don't have family family in the area, that would be what our goal is. Most of our moms are corporate women, and they are typically 30 to 45, and they may not have family in the area to be able to help them as well. That's where we want to come into corporations and be a discount and program for them and a wellness resource for their employees.
Is it difficult to get enough nannies to fulfill that need?
It has been in the past. We've definitely grown really quickly and trying to find really quality people. But I look for people that have helper spirits that really want to snuggle babies for a living. And we have a lot of empty nesters. We have a lot of younger people in childhood education that are just wonderful women that have been a great source for me.
And I'm also very impressed with some of the volunteer work that you're doing. Maybe you can share that.
We volunteer with the Pregnancy Center East. It's a resource for teen moms or young moms in crisis with their, not sure if they're wanting to abort their baby or keep their baby. So they're a help center for them. And we do an afterbirth parenting class quarterly for them where we help teach them how to take care of their baby. We also take a lot of donations from our clients to take to give to those moms and distribute to them. And they are able to reach out to us if they have any additional issues.
So do you see this business, Rachel, expanding beyond Cincinnati?
We're getting ready to open a Northern Kentucky location in about another month. And then hopefully our goal would be to open a few other locations and then franchise in the next couple years.
Well, that's very exciting. I'm very happy for you. That's fabulous. And it's certainly filling a very much needed type of service for working families. If folks listening would like to learn more about Mommy's Dream Team, perhaps even learn what it takes to work for Mommy's Dream Team or engage your services, what is your contact information?
They can find us at mommiesdreamteam.com or they can go to Facebook, Pinterest, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, or our blog.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Tom, many baby boomers know that waiting to claim Social Security benefits generally leads to higher monthly payments, but most people don't realize what a huge difference just waiting a few years will make.
Well, that's right, Crystal. The normal retirement age for most baby boomers now is age 66, if they're retiring soon. And if they wait beyond age 66 for each year they wait, they typically get an 8% increase in benefits. So if you wait the full 4 years until age 70, you'll get 32% more benefits.
For people who are trying to evaluate that and really understand, they can actually go to the Social Security website and determine what their projected benefit is going to be even now, correct?
Yes, you can go to the website. You can actually log in under your own, you know, name and Social Security number, and you can get your actual benefits, your projected benefits. And you can do some calculations. You can go online and do calculations to determine which options are better for you. But the bottom line in terms of delaying is there's a trade-off. You know, the longer you live, the better off you're going to be if you delay the benefits, assuming you can afford to do so.
So many people can't wait to get 62, to turn 62, so they can start getting back some of that money that's been taken out of their paycheck all these years. But as you mentioned, that's not the best option for many people, especially if the earnings level hasn't reached the maximum. The Social Security Administration looks at your top 35 years of earnings. So another reason to wait, in addition to the fact that you get more if you wait, if you're earning more money, if you're still employed and you're maxing out Social Security, that adds to the threshold in terms of maxing out and generating additional funds.
Well, that's correct. If you take early Social Security benefits, meaning before your normal retirement age, which for most people is 66, so you can take the retirement benefits as early as age 62, but you get reduced benefits. You're also subject to an earnings test for the early benefits. So you may get reduced benefits anyway unless you've quit working.
Yes, and if you look back 35 years prior to the age of 62, some of those years may have been low earnings years. Most people generate more earnings as they age and progress through their careers. That's another reason to wait.
Well, and you can do calculations to determine, are you better off taking the benefits now, even if you don't need the money, and then investing that so that you'll have, you know, more income later on? Or are you better off delaying and increasing? But the rate of increase by delaying the benefits is pretty high from the Social Security Administration. So the trade-off of doing that versus investing the money is, it's usually pretty tough to get enough of an investment return.
And if you're married, you really have to coordinate these payments at the couple level, because if the higher earning person in the marriage claims early, it can significantly lower the amount of the surviving spouse. So if you are the husband in the relationship, you've made a lot of money through the years, your wife is younger than you or perhaps not generated as much earnings through her lifetime, if you claim early, you're reducing what she may get upon the husband's death.
Yeah, I think the real key is don't make an emotional decision and say, I want to get my benefits now because I'm afraid they won't be around forever. I mean, maybe they won't be around forever, but if you're old enough to start collecting benefits, chances are they'll be around long enough to pay you the benefits. And so you really need to make a financial decision, not an emotional one.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Well, tax season is in full swing, and many businesses are gathering their information, starting to prepare their business tax returns, and finding, in many cases, they owe a bit more than they thought they did.
Yes, the bad news when you have a good year is that you generally have a higher tax liability. So it's even more important to look at overlooked deductions or even overlooked credits that you've not taken advantage of before.
Just because you perhaps didn't write a check or incur an expense at December 31st, there are still things that you can take a close look at now in 2014 that can reduce your prior taxable income. One of those is the research and development credit. That is a very often overlooked deduction that can provide so much benefit for more people than they would anticipate.
I think we've both seen many examples where companies have overlooked that R&D credit because they think they have to have a laboratory in order to be doing research. But really, many businesses perform research, whether it's creating prototypes of their products or improving their processes or developing computer software programs. There's lots of different areas that qualify for the research and development tax credit. And it's a pretty nice benefit if you can acquire it.
We have seen businesses who've saved thousands and thousands of dollars, and oftentimes where they've missed it in the past, we've gone back and filed amended returns, recouping significant amount of tax. So take a look at that. Another one that a lot of folks overlook is the benefits of doing a cost segregation study. And what that is if you've recently acquired a new office building, manufacturing facility, or if you've made substantial improvements to your real estate, you may be able to take advantage of much quicker depreciation deductions instead of just categorizing everything in the building life, which is 39 years. So it's much beneficial. It's very beneficial if you can reduce the life to take a faster deduction.
That is. And a related thing that's a newer event is these new repairs regulations, which can allow you to expense older portions of a building that you've replaced when you make repairs. So you may want to do a study under the repairs regulations. Another big overlooked deduction that we see often is something called the Domestic Production Activities Deduction.
It's a mouthful.
Which is a mouthful, and it's relatively complicated, but many people think it only applies to manufacturers, but it applies to lots of different types of businesses, and that deduction equals up to 9% of your taxable income, so it can be thousands and thousands of dollars for many businesses.
Everything we're talking about, you can actually evaluate now in 2014, and if you qualify, you can go back and take those deductions and those credits on your 2013 tax return. And a new rule that came out this year that's more simplified are for folks that have offices in their home and they can qualify for an office in the home deduction. The IRS has come out with a simplified method of calculating that deduction.
Well, and that method basically allows you to deduct up to $1,500 with very little documentation as long as you do have a legitimate home office.
Yes, it can't be a place in your kitchen that you check your email. It really does have to be an area of your home that's used exclusively and regularly for business. Job hunting expenses are another one that I think most folks overlook. Even if you don't get the job and you've traveled somewhere, if it's in the same line of profession, you may be able to deduct those. You cannot do that, though, if it's your very first job. Just take a look and see if there are things that you can still take advantage of that will reduce your 2013 income. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guests today are Steve Hampton and Mike Morgan. Steve is the executive director of the Brewery District Community Urban Redevelopment Corporation, and Mike is a board member, amongst other things. Welcome, gentlemen. We're talking about Bockfest, which is coming up right around the corner. It's so much fun, such a huge celebration of the great tradition. Maybe you can share some of the details.
Sure. This is the 22nd Bockfest. It's a neighborhood celebration of Bock beer, Cincinnati's brewing heritage, and the coming of spring. It kicks off with a parade from Arnold's, the oldest bar in the city, up Main Street. The festivities begin with the monks from next door. The friars bless the beer, and we kick off the whole weekend. There's live entertainment all weekend, both at Bockfest Hall, which is a temporary festival hall, as well as over a dozen participating venues throughout over the Rhine and downtown. And it goes all weekend long. It's full of fun activities.
Well, you have the monks bless the beer, and really they have a heritage in Bock beer, don't they?
They absolutely do. Bock beer actually comes from monks, and they brewed it for Lenten fast. And that's why Bockfest is always first weekend of March. It doesn't align perfectly with Lent anymore, but that's the concept. And originally, the monks would drink Bock beer during Lenten fast in lieu of eating. I have frequently tried that in the month of February myself. And it
Just to make sure it works.
Yeah, it's mixed results, really.
So let's talk about some of the fun activities. And you mentioned something, Steve, that's near and dear to all of our hearts, and that's the coming of spring. We've had such a cruel winter. Anything spring sounds wonderful.
We actually have a couple pre-festivities that actually help with that. The weekend before, we actually burn a snowman in effigy to help ward off the winter weather. A number of years ago, we had right before the Bockfest parade kicked off, we had about a foot of snow dumped and kind of canceled the parade officially. We kind of still had it, but we do that every year as a way to ward that off and really, again, celebrate the coming of spring and look forward to all that winter doldrum and get out, have some fun, have a beer, and have a good time.
Well, there's obviously going to be plenty of beer available at Bockfest, but what are some of the other things people can do?
Again, there's live entertainment at Bockfest Hall and most of the participating venues. During the weekend, we have tours of some of the historic breweries, some of the historic churches. There's authentic German Day Continental Sunday at Bockfest Hall, where we have the German groups come and dance and sing and play music. There's also a Bock beer homebrew competition on Saturday that the Blotarians help run, and that's the winner of that actually gets their beer brewed as a Schelling Bock the next year. We also have all the local breweries participating. Meet the brewer in here and learn about Bock beer on Saturday afternoon.
And for folks who haven't been down in the Over the Rhine area recently, it's absolutely amazing. Certainly, this is a great reason to get down there, have fun. A lot of this is free. Most of it's free, isn't it?
Everything is free except for the tours. There's a free shuttle that'll take you around to all the venues so you can hop around, check out different things in different places, and yep, it's all free for the tours.
Tell us about the Sausage Queen competition. That has to be somewhat interesting.
The Sausage Queen competition is a gender-neutral competition to anoint Bockfest royalty. This is the sixth year of it, and the idea of the competition, obviously, it's a little tongue-in-cheek, but we do these preliminary rounds at bars leading up to Bockfest. We have six preliminary rounds, and each bar sends their contestant to Bockfest for the finals, kind of the way a state sends their contestants to Miss America, except this is vastly more important because this is an actual queen. The only official title of royalty that is granted in the city of Cincinnati. So it's very, very serious stuff, very important.
You guys, this sounds like a lot of fun. If folks listening would like more information, where can they find out?
Bockfest.com is the best place to go.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guests today are Steve Hampton. Steve is the executive director of the Brewery District Community Urban Redevelopment Corporation. And Mike Morgan, who serves on the board for the Brewery District, and both of you are involved in Bockfest, which is coming up the first full weekend in March. And this festival's really evolved over the years, hasn't it? I mean, it started out, 20-some years ago?
It started out 22 years ago. It was originally basically a promo for Christian Moorlein Bock beer, back when it was made by Hudepohl in the early 90s. And so the festival went on for a while, but I got involved in 2006. And at that point, it was really on death's door because we had had a lot of downturn in the entertainment district on Main Street, and Over the Rhine was not looking good. So in 2006, we had three venues involved in Bockfest, and I think I had a $500 budget for the festival that year. It was pretty much at the low point. And our philosophy and commitment at that period of time was to do something that was really interesting, that was different from other festivals, and to attract people down to Over the Rhine and see the potential of it. So we started to grow it, and that has happened, and the philosophy remains the same. You know, this year we're going to have over 18 participating venues, which is all you need to know really about how much has changed in Over the Rhine in those years. But philosophy remains the same, even though we now have 18 different bars. We also have a lot of restaurants are involved this year. You know, there's different things going on in all of these locations.
Which is just a great way to get people who don't normally come down to the Over the Rhine area to be able to celebrate what's going on, our history, our heritage, whether you live in Mason or Kentucky or up near Dayton. It's still a great idea to come and really take part in this whole huge celebration. And Mike, you mentioned earlier you had $500 budget, but now a lot of people are getting in on the act, aren't they? There's many sponsors that's helping you put this festival on.
Yeah, we absolutely owe everything to our sponsors. And they're the ones that let us keep this philosophy going of a free event and an event that's not price gouging. Christian Moreline has been and remains one of our big sponsors. So is Cervati and Queen City Sausage and Arnold's. And so all of these sponsors are people and companies that are local, that are Cincinnati's. And that's a big part of the philosophy as well.
When you celebrate not just the bars, those venues, but lots of other parts of Over the Rhine, which you have tours, and there's lots of activities you can take part in, even without having any beer, right?
Yeah, we celebrate the city and the neighborhood's German heritage. Continental Sunday, we have a lot of the local German groups come out singing, dancing, live music. We do tours of the historic brewery buildings that are all throughout the neighborhood, some of the historic churches. And that heritage is such a great piece of it. It's the region's history. So many people can trace their lineage back to the center of the city and Over the Rhine. And reconnecting with that is a great way to show them, you know, the importance of the neighborhood and why we should continue to redevelop there.
And the parade is what day?
Parade is Friday night, kicks off at 6 p.m. from Arnold's, the oldest bar in the city, and straight up Main Street.
And who can be in the parade?
Anybody and everybody.
Yeah, we have a couple of trophies that are made for this event, actually, that are fantastic works of art. So we encourage people to do something interesting and come out. Anybody that does something interesting can be in it.
When, gentlemen, and where, I should say, can people find out more information about Bockfest, the parade? What's the website?
Everything is at bockfest.com.
Well, it sounds like a good time. Looking forward to it. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Alicia Kintner. Alicia is the Chief Operating Officer of ArtsWave. And Alicia, you've been here in the area about a year. How do you like Cincinnati? And what do you think of our arts community?
I think Cincinnati's arts community is almost unparalleled. I am so excited to be getting to know the many arts assets here. I don't think people who are from here necessarily realize what an incredible array of arts organizations and activities there are here. Somebody said to me there are more festivals and activities in Cincinnati than there are weekends, and I think that's true.
Well, one of the reasons that we have so many arts is because we have such a successful ArtsWave campaign. It's one of the most successful donor campaigns in the country, isn't it?
It is. We are the oldest and largest United Arts Fund in the country. And I can tell you that as an outsider looking in, one of the things that was so impressive was the number of donors and citizen participants in this campaign for the arts. I really think that that is another very unique aspect of Greater Cincinnati.
Why do you think that folks here in our tri-state region are so supportive of the arts, especially given the fact that we aren't one of the largest metropolitan areas in the entire country, yet we have such huge support?
I think you have a long history of support for the arts, and that you're nice to credit ArtsWave as creating this ecosystem of arts, but it does trace back to the generosity of individuals here going back more than 100 years. And I think that it's sort of part of Cincinnati's DNA. I've been trying to figure out just what is it all about. There was a history, I understand, in the Cincinnati public schools where kids were actually encouraged to donate their pennies to buy art for the hallways of the schools. And that's kind of remarkable to me that even decades ago, you were encouraging kids to be philanthropists for the arts.
The ArtsWave campaign has recently kicked off. We're into it a couple weeks now. What's the goal?
The goal is big this year. It's $12 million. We raised $11.5 million last year, so it's a $500,000 increase. And last year's increase was $300,000. So this year is a big leap forward, and it's going to take every member of the community stepping up to help us reach this goal. We see that the arts assets here are among the top selling points for HR departments, for realtors, for others who are trying to entice conventions here, things like that. We at ArtsWave believe that the arts can contribute collectively to two major outcomes in our community: a more vibrant regional economy and more connected people, more connected communities. So the social benefits of the arts are really key too. In total, ArtsWave is funding over 100 arts and cultural organizations, and they include community centers in neighborhoods and galleries and arts groups that are lesser known but doing really important work, often in schools, community centers. We're very clear that financial performance and running a healthy organization fiscally and through governance is a really key part of the criteria. If you don't have a healthy arts organization, they aren't going to be around that long. So their longevity is important to us. But we use volunteer panelists who, over a period of years, get to know the organizations, and we have a very rigorous review process and a proposal process that asks organizations increasingly to be measuring the impact of the key activities that they do.
So if folks listening today would like to learn more about ArtsWave, about the campaign, how their business can participate, how can they find that information?
Well, the easiest way is to go to our website, theartswave.org.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Alicia Kintner. Alicia is the Chief Operating Officer of ArtsWave. And Alicia, I know the ArtsWave annual campaign is in full swing now. You've got a pretty lofty goal this year, $12 million, $500,000 more than last year. One of the things you do is engage companies to help their employees participate not only in the campaign, but in more awareness of the arts. What are some of the specific things you do?
Well, Tom, we're in about 300 companies doing workplace giving campaigns this spring. But as you noted, it's about more than raising dollars. It's also raising awareness for the many arts assets of this region and how employees and their families can get connected to what's going on. So we try to see ourselves as that kind of connection on a year-round basis. But during the workplace campaign for the arts, we bring in artists and entertainers and activities that can help employees find their inner creativity or encourage them to bring their kids' art in, and often we ask employees to get in the act themselves. This year, our community campaign chair is Melanie Healy of P&G, and she is challenging the community to Cincy Sings, a community-wide sing-off that will be held at the Aronoff in April.
You know, and it's so fun, isn't it, that so much opportunity for businesses to really help the arts and allow their employees to have fun.
Well, it is so important because the more satisfying an employee is with his workplace, the more likely he is to stay in the job. And so the arts and the ArtsWave campaign can over time help with that bigger corporate objective of employee retention.
One wonderful thing, you do many wonderful things, but one specific thing that you do that I really love is this weekend sampler that you do, and I know Macy's is a big supporter of that. We've had one already on February 8th, but we have two more coming up.
Yes, the next one is March 15th, and the third one is April 12th. These are free day-long events across the region. So multiple venues are hosting Macy's Arts Sampler events. In total, we have over 140 events at about 50 venues. And on March 15th, we're very excited, at Music Hall, there will be a joint concert with the Cincinnati Symphony, Cincinnati Opera, the Ballet, the May Festival, and Cincinnati Shakespeare also will be on stage. So that's a great joint concert in Over the Rhine, but there will be other things across the region on March 15th.
And again, these are free, right? So people can come and participate,
free.
Take,
yes.
See what they like, what they don't like as much.
That's right. The name says it all. It's a sampling of arts activities. It's a great way to introduce kids to the arts. And many of the programs are actually focused on kids, and they're all free. Easy way to find out is through our app, the Macy's Arts Sampler app, available in the iTunes Store or the Android Marketplace. And you can search by venue or by types of art for each day, or even by neighborhood. So it's a great way to find out what to do.
And if there is a business who hasn't historically had a campaign within their organization, maybe they'd like to try it this year, how do they contact you?
We would love for new businesses to get involved with this campaign, and they can give us a call or go to www.theartswave.org and find out more about how to connect their business and their employees to the Arts Wave campaign.
Alicia, thank you so much for being our guest and for everything you're doing in the community.
Thank you.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Joe Hainsbauer. Joe is the president and CEO for the Corporation for Findlay Market. And Joe, you're right in the Over the Rhine section. You've been there as the CEO for a little over a year. We're in the dead of winter now. Still things happening down at Findlay Market?
Yeah, it's still hot at the market. We're there year-round. We have 37 full-time vendors and quite a few farmers now that do year-round growing, whether it be in greenhouses or hothouses. So we've got a full market all year-round, Tuesday through Sunday.
What are some of the major accomplishments that you feel like you've had?
It's been an eventful year, you know, some small things and some big things. We're able to add a program this year called Veggie Valet that will be more useful in the spring and summer months than it is in the winter, but it is a refrigerated truck. So if you come down and buy your groceries and decide that the bands in the beer garden are too enticing to head on home, you can drop off your groceries in the Veggie Valet and sit and hang out for a while before you head home. So it allows our patrons to extend their shopping trips a bit. So we were able to add that this year. We've got three new storefronts that will be greeting everybody here in April, just south of the beer garden. So we have three new vendors that will be in full-time spots across from the market. And probably most importantly, thanks to everyone out there that's listening, we crossed over 1 million visitors for the first time ever at the market. So it's a very vibrant place. It's the fourth most visited location, but behind only the Reds, the Museum Center, and the Cincinnati Zoo.
Well, looking forward to next year, Joe. What, you got any big plans?
Probably one of the biggest things that we're working on right now is trying to bring a shared use incubator kitchen to fruition for the market neighborhood. And basically what that is a support for food entrepreneurs, right? So if you're making granola at home and everybody tells you how wonderful it is, but you're not quite ready to turn your house into a production food facility, and you're also not ready to go out and get the $250,000 loan to build out your own kitchen, this facility will be a place where food entrepreneurs can go rent by the hour and test their product out, if you will.
Pretty cool. And then ultimately, presumably might be vendors at Findlay Market.
That's exactly right. It'll create a nice pipeline for us to, you know, to bring new items to market. And with all that foot traffic, it's a great place to get your product in front of customers who are interested in buying local and supporting small business.
You know, we have a fabulous culinary school up at Cincinnati State. So they graduate several individuals who have expertise in cooking and being a chef and so forth. Are you seeing some coordination with that organization?
Yeah, absolutely. We've had probably a half a dozen conversations already. We're looking for all kinds of opportunities, from everything from the opportunity for Cincinnati State students to be interns or kitchen support staff to support those food entrepreneurs. Many of the folks going through the culinary school at Cincinnati State have the big dream, right, of owning your own restaurant with your name up at the top of it. But there are many folks that are going to school there as well that have other things in mind. We want to be able to be a place where those students can come down and test their entrepreneurial skills out as well.
Well, Findlay Market seems to be a place that people have come to even when they would only come to Findlay Market, turn around and leave, but like the Vegetable Valet seems to indicate, a lot of people come and hang around in the Over the Rhine area for the day, don't they?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we see quite a bit of that kind of crossover traffic, and we feel that we've played a special spot in the neighborhood and its redevelopment and having people comfortable with the neighborhood, and so customers of the market going elsewhere. But certainly we have also benefited from, you know, a renovated Washington Park, which is only 5 blocks from the market, and all the new restaurants. Findlay Market is the place where foodies go to shop. Right, and that's a nice match there, if you will.
If folks listening today would like more information, do you have a website they can check out?
Yeah, you can go to findlaymarket.org.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Joe Hainsbauer. Joe is the president and CEO of the Corporation for Findlay Market. And Joe, I know you've been CEO there for about a year. Longer term, over the next 3 to 5 years, what is your vision for Findlay Market?
You know, the market is a vibrant spot itself today, but it sits in the center of a neighborhood, the northern parts of Over the Rhine, right in the middle of the brewery district, which is still largely a vacated neighborhood. The really exciting part about what's coming up for, you know, the next several years at the market is a redevelopment of the neighborhood, right, that will have the opportunity to drive a significant number of folks to the market, especially weekdays, Tuesday through Friday, to expand the amount of shoppers and customers we have during that time. And we're going to see that continued development. We've seen already the opening of the breweries in the neighborhood with Christian Moreline being just a block to the east and Rheingeist a block to the north. And really what we're excited about is the redevelopment of residential properties in the neighborhood.
Well, and not only in the neighborhood, but also the people downtown mm-hmm. will have a much easier access to Findlay Market when the streetcar is up and running, because it's going to stop there, correct?
Absolutely. And certainly there has been plenty of conversation and controversy about the streetcar. And regardless of kind of ultimately where you sit on that issue, from a Findlay Market perspective, it's going to be nothing but good. You wrap a streetcar around the market, you connect it through Over the Rhine to downtown and the banks, and it's going to create access to a grocery store that residents, new residents especially of downtown and Over the Rhine, didn't previously have easy access to.
Bottom line is we are having a streetcar. Now we need to make the whole thing as successful as possible.
That's right. And progress is chugging along. They've already passed the market on the Elm Street side, and they're coming back down the street on the Ray Street side. So they're making in progress every day.
I know that you get a large amount of your customers on the weekends, mm-hmm. but how do you get more on the weekdays?
A good portion of that is neighborhood residents, right? If you're living a block from the market or you're living over the Rhine, you have the opportunity to stop into the market in the morning or come home in the evening and do small grocery trips at a neighborhood store like it used to be. And I think that's the biggest part of what we're going to see. We have a fairly robust market traffic, especially later in the week now, Thursdays and Fridays. We've seen an increasing number of folks that will come up from Over the Rhine or come down the hill from the hospitals at lunchtime or after shifts around 3 o'clock to do grocery shopping. And that streetcar is really going to create a new opportunity for folks that are working downtown to hop on the streetcar, go up to the market for lunch.
When people live next to an open door market, why mm-hmm. wouldn't you go buy fresh?
Yeah, absolutely. It changes the way you shop, right? Instead of going to the grocery store maybe once every week or once every other week, it becomes much more of a situation where you're going to do small trips where you're going to the store 2 or 3 times a week, and you can then buy things that are fresh and not frozen and grown right down the street from you. We have a Findlay Market Farms program. We have 3/4 of an acre at Liberty and Elm that we grow on now, and we're expanding that program. We're going to be growing at a farm in northern Kentucky this year as well, and that is about not only growing food, but also about growing farmers, right? So we have an apprenticeship program where we bring in young farmers, help them to learn the process of farming, but also the process of selling retail, and continue to cultivate that as a way to expand the offerings of the local market.
That's so exciting. Joe, thank you so much for everything you're doing and for being our guest. And if folks listening would like to learn about Findlay Market or learn more about Findlay Market, what's your website?
It's findlaymarket.org.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.